Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, March 25th. Coming up, we'll listen to a conversation with locals and university faculty about what it was like growing up in the American education system post-Brown v. Board. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Around 150 people gathered on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Quad yesterday to protest the administration's response to pro-Palestinian speech. Over the summer, the university updated its guidelines for protests on campus. The changes affect expressive activity as well as the use of university property. The American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois has said the update led to students being punished for protesting. Jessica Greenberg is a professor with the group Faculty for Justice in Palestine. She says organizers are trying their best to follow those policies.
The rules and regulations are changing so rapid fire, which is part of the fear and part of the sense of chaos and being out of control. So if we violate something, who knows? The rules are changing every day, which is, I have to say, not a very rule of law kind of society to live in, but that's what it is.
The demonstration comes as the Trump administration is trying to deport a Columbia University student who is a legal permanent resident for his involvement in protests there. U of I students and faculty are calling for his freedom and want to make sure that doesn't happen on their campus. Governor J.B. Pritzker's initiative to bring bachelor's degrees to Illinois community colleges stalled in the General Assembly last week. Isabella Nieto reports.
House Higher Education Committee Chair and Democratic Representative Katie Stewart didn't call the bill for a vote last week. That came amid concerns about its impact on four-year colleges. The bill would allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees in high-demand fields, such as early childhood education, manufacturing, and nursing. In a statement, Stewart says the goal in holding the bill is to work out how to support both people looking for credentials and, quote, the missions and student populations at our existing four-year institutions across Illinois. Lawmakers adjourn at the end of May. Isabella Nieto.
President Trump recently signed an executive order gutting a number of independent agencies, including the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Adora Namigata explains the impact.
Libraries, museums, and educational institutions turned to the Institute of Museum and Library Services for funding. The Chicago-based American Library Association's president, Cindy Hole, says the IMLS provides the only line of federal funding for libraries. She warns of a major potential ramification of this order.
We may see Americans displaced and not being able to access information online.
That's especially true if they live in small or rural communities that do not have easy access to broadband. I'm Adora Namigadde.
The Fighting Illini women's basketball season came to an end yesterday. The team lost to the number one-seeded Texas Longhorns in the second round of the NCAA tournament, 65-48. IPM's Colin Hyslope has more.
The historic season for the Illini ended abruptly Monday as the team faced one of their toughest opponents this season. Illinois scored close behind Texas in the first quarter, but the team wasn't able to close the gap and didn't have a strong enough defense to blunt their opponents. The Longhorns advanced to the Sweet 16, while the Illini made history, making it to the second round of the tournament for the first time in 25 years. Illinois will be losing four senior starters. After the game, Illinois head coach Shauna Green said she's grateful to have worked with her players.
A special group. It's been a special journey, you know, throughout this whole season. I could not be more proud of our team, of our senior group, who has just completely revitalized this program.
Green's record with the team is now 63-35. That brings the Illini season to a close with an overall record of 22-10. I'm Colin Hyslope, IPM News.
Still to come, we'll listen to a conversation with locals and university faculty about what it was like growing up in the American education system post-Brown v. Board. That story is coming up next on 217 Today, but first, your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of light rain and a high of 55 degrees and a northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain and a low of 34 degrees, northwest wind 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 58 degrees, northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 37 degrees, northwest wind 5 miles per hour. And for Thursday, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms late in the day and a high of 60 degrees, with a southwest wind 5 to 15 miles per hour.
Next time on The 21st Show, there's a push to repeal Section 230, the federal law that shields tech companies from liability for user content. We'll talk about that and what its removal could mean for free speech online. Plus, the future of Illinois' flag redesign is in doubt. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. The uncertainty around diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, as well as the future of funding for the Department of Education, have left some in the U.S. excited and others worried. That has many people reflecting on the 1954 landmark civil rights case that reshaped the education landscape in the U.S. The Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas Supreme Court case ordered states to desegregate students in their schools and classrooms. IPM's Dialogue host Kennedy Vinson spoke with locals and university faculty about what it was like growing up in the American education system post Brown v. Board.
The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign organized a Brown v. Board series, ranging from unfinished promises to the final event, a fireside chat. The event happened earlier this March. It was about local change agents linked to this significant history. One featured speaker was Dr. Barbara Suggs Mason, a public school educator in Illinois for over 37 years, and now she's the co-chair of the African American Heritage Trail. She grew up in Champaign-Urbana, so I sat down with her to learn more about her life, growing up after the monumental court decision, and how it impacted the local Black community.
I would say the immediate effects of Brown versus the Board of Education really didn't take effect here until the 60s. So it was really 12, 13 years after Brown versus the Board of Education that we really began to look at the schools in terms of the desegregation. Growing up here, there were the elementary schools in the community. The segregation was de facto segregation, meaning they were neighborhood schools. And if you lived in a neighborhood that you were assigned by boarders to a particular school, you might have gone to an integrated elementary school. It really just depended. So Marquette School, Gregory School, and I believe Lincoln School were schools that had African Americans attending them. I attended Marquette. My father attended Marquette in the 30s. And so that was one experience that you might have. The other was if you lived in the North End in certain boundaries and you were African American, you attended first Lawhead School, which was torn down probably in the 70s, but closed in 1951. At that time, the school district built Booker T. Washington Elementary School. 1952, it opened. And after, I believe, Booker T. Washington went up to the fifth grade, there was another school that doesn't get talked about too much, and that was Willard School. And Willard School was right off of Fifth Street. If you know where Salem Baptist Church is, there's a parking lot in the back of the church, and that's where Willard School was. And it also had a Black principal, I believe Mr. McMurray. And Booker T. Washington at that time, the principal was Odelia Wesley. And those were primarily segregated schools. The population, I actually talked to some people who went to Booker T. Washington. Almost all of the teachers were African-American, and with the exception of maybe two or three students who were assigned to probably special education classes, it was a totally African-American population. And so the interesting thing about attending Marquette, I started there in kindergarten and went all the way through sixth grade, is I have a picture of my kindergarten class, and in that kindergarten class there were two African-American students, myself and Wanjel Carter. And by the time I got to sixth grade, and I have a picture of my sixth grade class, there were only two white students left at the school. The rest of the class was African-American. So you can see that the school resegregated over that period of time. And as I said, Gregory School was one of the schools, and Lincoln, I believe, was the other, that were integrated by virtue of the fact that African-American families lived within the boundaries of that school.
Another featured speaker at the U of I event was Angela Rivers. She spent her adult life educating through art and museum work in Chicago, and then helped create the African American Heritage Trail in Champaign County. But unlike her cousin, Dr. Suggs Mason, Rivers grew up in the post-Brown schools that were majority white. She spoke with me about a painful experience she had growing up under a white teacher.
It was in fourth grade, and it was a science project, and I chose dinosaurs for my science project. At the time, my mother was working for Our Wonderful World that was here in Champaign. It was an encyclopedia, and she worked as an illustrator with Our Wonderful World. So we had a set of Our Wonderful World encyclopedias. And of course, my father had bought a second set as well. But I would research all of this stuff, reading, and I would take the little plastic dinosaurs and paint them so they'd look realistic as to what back then they thought realistic dinosaurs looked like. And set up this whole little diorama. I even made a volcano that erupted.
It erupted.
Yeah, I made it so that it would erupt, and took it to school for the project. And a teacher gave me an F. And she gave me the F because she said that there was no way possible that I could have done this by myself, and I could have researched and read all that material. So my mother came up to school and read her the riot act, demanded to see the principal, and told her that she would go to the school board meeting as well. And the principal had the teacher apologize and kind of back off, you know, so they knew not to mess with us. This microaggression, you just didn't arbitrarily mess with children, mess with us.
Mm-hmm.
All the parents in our little enclave was pretty much like my mother. They didn't take that. You know, they wouldn't allow that to happen to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were also kind of taught the old fashioned thing. You know, you don't start a fight, but you finish it. So if somebody picked on you in the playground, you finish it. You make sure that they understand never to mess with you again. You know, so that when we would start school year was very interesting because every year, you know, you had to start by laying the groundwork, you know, socially laying the groundwork of where you stand with the other students. And, you know, make sure the bullies understand they don't mess with you, you know, so that you would have a nice year.
The U of I Fireside Chat honored Dr. Suggs Mason and Angela Rivers through conversations and their personal testimonies as local change agents. For Dialogue, I'm Kennedy Vincent.
That was IPM's Dialogue host, Kennedy Vincent, speaking with Dr. Barbara Suggs Mason and educator Angela Rivers about how the Brown versus the Board of Education Supreme Court decision affected Champaign and Urbana years ago, and how we see its impact here today. You can listen to Dialogue on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1, Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. on WILL AM 580, or go to illinoisoul.org. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by May Antar, Isabella Nieto, Adora Nomigata, Colin Hyslop, and Kennedy Vincent. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.